Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from thecelticunderground.substack.com, the world's longest running football fans podcast. This podcast is inspired by VAR. I posted up a picture after the fifth goal was chopped off against Kilmarnock with a marginal offside decision, and was contacted by this week's contributor, who is Bjørn Posse Sandbo, a Norwegian football club chairman and experienced cinematographer, certainly knows his stuff, has interacted directly with the Norwegian FA on this stuff, and sort of reinforces what is patently obvious if you look into this to any margin, any estate, that we cannot give offsides that are as marginal as within 30 centimetres. That's the summary. This is free to everybody. There is an article that goes with it that Bjørn references, and that will be on a, that will be sent out to subscribers on the podcast, on the Substack site. So if you want to subscribe, go onto the Substack site and find out how you can subscribe. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with Bjørn Posse Sandbo, and I'll not do it in a Norwegian accent. During the recent home game to Kilmarnock, which I was actually watching from an airport coming home, so I'd missed the game, there was a goal chopped off Celtic against Kilmarnock. What would have been the fifth goal of the game ended up was a further goal that made it the fifth goal. And I tweeted a screenshot which showed the closeness of the offside decision that was given against Celtic, and pointed out how large the ball was in the picture and the lack of the gap between the red and the blue line. And one of the things that struck me, got lots and lots of replies and agreements and likes to that, was somebody replying on Twitter with the Twitter name at Posse, and from Norway. So I was puzzled as to why someone from Norway would contact me about that. And then the person from Norway also sent me a link to an article, which I'd done something much more basic than that, because this person's in TV, works in with TV stuff and I don't. So I'd previously written something after one of our similar offside decisions. So asked if he would come on the podcast. So I'm joined by, and I've already had one go at pronouncing the name, so I understand it's Bjørn Posse Sandbo. So Bjørn, do you want to introduce yourself to the Celtic Underground audience? Tell them who you are, who, what country you're from, who you support, and what your interest in VAR is.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Yeah, my feed is full of VAR stuff, and your post was one of them. I am the chairman of Stabæk Support, which is my club. I've been a chairman or in the board for the last 17 years. I used to be the spokesperson for Norwegian Supporters Alliance for 6 years, and I'm still connected there as a resource. This is where we have this website, footballsupporter.no. I've written a lot of articles there, and a lot about VAR, because this has been an ongoing struggle for the last 2.5 years here in Norway. I think it was in 2023 where we started using VAR, and I started asking some questions, because lines were everywhere and things were not making perfect sense, and we were also waiting a lot for them to place these lines, and we had some situations with a vertical line on the defender and not on the attacker, and we had lines that didn't correspond with the markings in the turf. So in October, I asked head of refereeing in our FA, Terje Hauge. He had claimed millimeter precision in the VAR technology. And I asked him, are you really sure that you have a millimeter precision in your tool? Because this will also come down to the cameras, the video overlay on their software. And this is where my profession comes in. I've been making television for, I think, maybe 15 years now. I work full-time on TV entertainment. I do some DOPing. I mean, I know a thing or two about cameras, and I also understand that it's complicated. This is not something I expect anyone to know without going to film school. When you're in charge of an extensive investment that will intervene massively in the sport, I would expect you to know something. So I told him, head of refereeing, that I don't think you have millimeter precision in this. A lot of these situations, they look so marginal. I can make this look different quite easily. I took a lot of screenshots and I went into Photoshop and made my own lines based on some anchor points in the field. And think about four of these marginal offsides where it could have gone both ways. So you don't have to decide which one to trust, the VAR image or mine, but it should prove that this is so marginal that you shouldn't overturn a decision from the ref. So the protests here, they escalated into 2024, and we have this famous fish cake incident. The idea was that it would attract seagulls, so the pitch should be engulfed in seagulls. It didn't happen, but fish cakes made the news all over, and we had to... we had to go into some meetings with the FA and discuss the way onwards. Right after this, there was another game that I have been writing about in the article, where there's an offside. It's our Europa League semifinalist, Bodeglimt. Are they?
Yeah,
how far they come? Yeah. And they have a 2-0 lead against Lazio as well. They had a goal, 2-1 goal in like the 88 minutes. It's sort of like a match-winning goal. And VAR intervenes and calls it an offside. And I look at these images and I see they have not made the vertical line from the foot of the attacker to the ground. They just drew it on top of his toe. So I was pretty sure that this was a wrong decision. And I made some measurements and I think they missed with about 35 centimeters based on the images that I get. And we, at least some of us in Norway, we have access to Media Bank. That's where all the matches are. Mm-hmm. So we can go into the raw material and see the same images as they do in the VAR room. And I was also invited to the VAR room to see how they work. And I honor that openness, it's not given that a supporter can just be let in, mm-hmm. and see how it works, but it gave me a greater understanding of what tools they have and what limitations they have. Because when it comes to VAR, it's a chain of events. So you have a measuring, you have a calibration, then you have a video overlay from the cameras, and then they're going to interpret this and make a decision if you're going to overrule the ref or not. But if you're not aware of the limitations or possible deviations in this chain, then it's very likely that you will make a wrong decision. So what I did, I sent most of this information to the FA, and I asked them, are you sure? Are you still sure that you did right in this game? And about a month after the VAR manager, so to speak, Svein Odd Vermoen, he used to be a referee, now he's head of VAR. Mm-hmm. He was in the media, and he did admit that they missed by 30 centimeters. He still claimed the decision was right, but he spent most of the time crying about, I wish that people would get more information about how this works. So most of his message was, we know how the system works, you don't. And that kind of flipped a switch in me. So I spent probably a day or something to write this article. And I just went from scratch. How long or how far will an object move given the broadcast specs that we have? Mm-hmm. And that is pretty simple math. It's when I was in the VAR room, they worked in 25p. That is also the material, the footage that we get from MediaBank. The broadcast, the producer's broadcast in on site on the stadium, it's probably 50i. So there is a conversion interpolation going on somewhere probably, but they were working in 25p in the VAR room. So by that, we can say there is 40 milliseconds of time difference from one frame to another. And you can calculate a deviation on a monitor. We always broadcast in full HD. So if you have a wide shot of the turf, 1 centimeter on the turf in my example is 0.37 pixels. So you would not be able to see 1 centimeter. 1 pixel would therefore be about 4 centimeters. But that is, we don't have that kind of footage from a match. There is always going to be pixel bleeding. It's going to be movement, motion blur.
So that would be in the picture that I put up where the ball is about 3 times the length of a normal football because you've got that motion blur within it. That's what you're describing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're getting to that as well. It's pretty easy to calculate because when you see the turf, you know the measurements from the kickoff point to the outer circle, and you can kind of measure, this is 8-point-something meters. That means this many pixels is the distance between the ball and all that. Yeah, and I found some research from the US. Thankfully, someone had already checked how fast a foot is moving when they shoot a ball. So I'm all ears for that. We know the speed of a running player. So we know in one frame, a player can run 16 to 18 centimeters like a motion blur. So that's probably where you can see like a head getting bigger or a body getting wider. And this is from a film or from a camera perspective, this is because we need light to expose the sensor or the film. So we are keeping the shutter open for a certain amount of time and it's close again and it will open for the next frame. So it's going to draw a picture. Anything that's not standing still will have motion blur to it. And we use this because this motion blur kind of creates a bridge from one frame to the next, so it's more comfortable to watch. There are some rules of thumb, like shutter speed at... it doesn't really matter. Thing is, that's how it's shot. most reality television, most football games are 50i, most reality television is 25p. And this applies to Norwegian VAR. A lot of it will apply everywhere else.
Well, I'm pretty sure, which is part of the reason for having this conversation, I'm pretty sure we have the same standard of cameras and the same technology behind our VAR that you will have at yours, because we are not the English Premiership who's got more money to chuck at the technology, although that's something we'll get onto as to is the technology at the elite level what they say it is. So, so that's part of the reason why I had on. Pretty sure that we are going to be sharing the same type of technology here around this. And I think most people can understand the principle of shutter goes on, shutter goes off, shutter goes on. You know, you're taking a picture at night and somebody will be moving in it because the shutter has to stay on longer.
Yeah.
Sophisticated cameras are going to have shorter shutter speeds, but there's still going to be that bleed of light coming in that's going to have that blur. I think most people will get that.
Yeah, and most people have seen it. They will see the difference between proper slow motion and if you just slow down and interpolate between frames.
Yeah.
So we have on our games, I think we have between 6 and 13 cameras, depending on if it's one of the main games or just a regular league game. Slow motion is a lot more expensive. It will give some costs both for the hardware and also for software, and it takes up more crew, more space. So we can't have super slow mo everywhere, of course. But if you have 100 frames a second, then you can just divide a lot of this by 4.
Mm-hmm.
So in the big leagues, like Premier League, they have somewhere around 30 cameras, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. 30 cameras just for the game. So, of course, they will have a lot of more camera angles. I've seen offside situations from Premier League as well that are questionable. But like on Twitter, these videos are taken down right away, so it's very difficult to kind of sit down and study it over time, because you're either going to have to pay for Premier League and then make your own recordings. And yeah, so here at least we can go back into the same material as the referees are seeing in the VAR room. And problem number one for me is that our broadcaster, TV2, they have been producing football for decades. I mean, they know what they're doing. And in the broadcast, if there's an offside, they will freeze the frame when the ball is played. But when the VAR releases their image, they're going to use the frame that comes after, when the ball has left the foot. So they consider that to be the moment the ball is passed. And this creates confusion. I've asked a few times now, do you agree or disagree on what's the right moment? When is the ball played? Because if defenders are trying to put an attacker offside, they're going to move towards midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And the attacker is probably heading the other way. So now, if VAR is using the next frame to call this an offside, you can go back into these numbers and you will say the defenders might be 16 to 18 centimeters this way, mm-hmm. or if they are between two frames, they can be 32 to 34 centimeters between two frames. And the same with the attacker, which is, it's becoming
quite a large margin of error.
Considerable distance, yeah.
If you've got one player running one speed at 30 kilometers an hour and another player running the opposite direction, and those are the two that you're determining offside, and they are both running at 30 kilometers an hour, and as you say, 16 to 18 centimeters a frame,
Yeah, indeed. And their foot will move faster. If they leap forward, they can be unlucky. Their foot can move more than half a meter between two frames. So this was what happened in that decisive game, Bodø/Glimt, where they had this winning goal called out for offside. The attacker was moving towards the goal and the defender was on the same foot the whole time. So the defending line didn't move, but the attacker obviously moved closer to the goal, more than 5 centimeters based on his shoe size, mm-hmm. which I know because he used to play for us. And the fact that we are now on the third season with VAR and the broadcaster and the VAR room don't agree on which frame to call offside. That is quite astonishing, I feel, given that we have had so much controversy, so many protests, and they have never recognized what I wrote as the fact. I did go to a meeting. There was a work group who were going to make a VAR report. It was I did say no to join the group because I knew it would be a decision for the annual general meeting and we would be overrun anyway, so I didn't want to waste my time. But I did have a presentation for them, and I said to them, like when I put this on Twitter a month ago, I challenge everyone to go into this and prove me wrong. Prove that anything of this is wrong. Because it's not that I know everything, but I just know that cameras are complicated. Technology is complicated. Mm-hmm. And there is always more to learn. And this should be meaningful, useful information for them if they want to make VAR a good tool. There were no protests, but they never responded, sort of. They changed what they call the protocol a bit. They said they will no longer intervene in marginal offsides. Up until then, we've had 4 situations with 4 centimeters something offside. I published images that showed the opposite. They look legit, the photos. And in offside situations, the match referee, he doesn't even go to check on the monitor. He just gets mm-hmm. a message to his ear, which creates another problem because there is a replay operator in the room who is responsible for picking the frame and drawing the lines, showing it to the VAR official, and then the VAR official will decide based on that. So technically, I could have been a replay operator. I'm in the industry. I could have made those 4 situations completely flipped. And no one would suspect anything. No one would have reason to suspect anything because it looks reasonable. I mean, it's marginal, but it's just their software based on where they place the points in the pixels that will give them a reading of 34 point something centimeters down to millimeter level. It's because their software is just using the pitch measurement and the calibration as a base, and then you have to kind of guess and place a point. This is the edge of the shoulder, this is the edge of the foot, and then you need to judge how high is this above the ground. Is it turning to the left, to the right? We don't have a top-down view. So mm-hmm. we have to make some guessing. And I asked the people in that meeting, it was a referee, it was people from the FA and from some of the clubs, and I asked them, do you know who your replay operators are? Do you know if they support one club or another? Do you know if they bet on games, and they had no idea. But this replay operator is effectively refereeing this match because he can subconsciously or with intention draw lines that will make VAR disallow a goal for a marginal, very marginal offside. And it would look legit, and it's also in the nature of VAR to protect itself as the answer, the definitive answer. I mean, VAR rarely admits mistakes, mm-hmm. at least here.
Yeah.
So it would be a problem if they found out that some people have been supporting another team, or I mean, they included a third-party freelancer in the refereeing team without even thinking about it. And they have been making decisions based on technology and video material that they don't know how works. I mean, our VAR boss, he was asked about offside cameras, and he basically said an offside camera is an offside camera, and well, it's still a camera. But that's when I realized that he or they really believe that the camera is a precise imprint of something going on in time, and they really do not understand that a camera can, I mean, you can be fooled by an image. You can be fooled by perspective. You can be fooled by curved lines, which is very common in zoom lenses, especially broadcast lenses. So if you're not aware of it, then you shouldn't be head CEO of the tool, I feel.
So there's a number of things that you covered there. So from my perspective, I was a big fan of the principle of bringing technology in to deal with the glaringly obvious faults. And because football was pretty late to the party, tennis, cricket, rugby, loads of sports had already implemented television technology to make decisions. I actually thought football would hit the ground running because they would look at American football, rugby, cricket, whatever sport has got tennis, whatever sport is using technology to make decisions. I thought they would sit down, assess it all, see where they've made errors, and not have their errors in the first place. But straight away with VAR in Scotland, I remember once in the first season we had it, where to try and demonstrate the point you're making, to try and demonstrate that it was great and how great it worked, they give you an insight into how an offside decision had been made. Again, it was a Celtic game. Celtic were playing Ross County, and it was a very tight marginal call. But watching that technology is what put me off and started me on the route of, we don't have the ability to call these really close. Because firstly, they were rocking between frames to try and determine the point you made about when the ball has left the foot. So they kept rocking backwards and forwards. I mean, obviously, the example in this video that was shown at the time in the first season, they were labouring the point to try and emphasise it. So they wouldn't have had enough time to spend this amount of time. But they were rocking backwards and forwards on this frame and then went, yeah, I think that's the best one. And I thought, wow. Immediately, just in that point, you think you're demonstrating to me that this would work, when actually what you're demonstrating to me is you're guessing from point one. Then they put the line on the pitch, and the line was put down not next to the players. Now, I'm sure, again, they were doing this to demonstrate a point of, and then they were dragging the line up the pitch. So they were demonstrating that they weren't starting with a guesswork, but they were starting well away, and then again, the principle of the video was patently from their perspective to illustrate how much effort they were making to get this right. But again, I then realised that they were pulling this line up, and the point you make about 4 centimeters is 1 pixel. They were trying to get to the absolute toe of the football boot or the guy's shoulder, whatever it was that they were measuring against at the time. Can't quite remember that much. And they were pulling this line up. And again, the line on the camera angle and position and everything that they had, the line was about as thick as the guy's foot. Mm. So it was clear to me that it wasn't precise enough to be able to say, yes, I'm drawing this line right on where the edge of his foot is. They didn't have the ability to be sure that there wasn't an overlap on that line. Mm. And straight away, I immediately thought, you've got 2 guesses in the first thing that you've done. Then, as you say, there was the dotted line down. And again, you've got a cat. You're trying to do this with depth on a 2D screen. So there's a guy at the far end of the pitch that you're trying to do this dotted line down. And whenever it's queried, and again, getting back to your point of, it's almost how dare you question the technology. The technology is perfect, don't you know? Mm. And whenever you question, well, that line doesn't look straight, that's just because you don't understand the perspective of camera angles, mate. Yeah. That's your problem. That's the sort of any, and then again, you know, we've just discussed one frame to the other, and that there's, you know, 25, 50 frames in a second. The defenders of it will turn around and say, you're chatting about whether it's one frame or another, and there's 25 frames in 1 second of film. For goodness sake, of course it's going to be accurate when you're down at that level. But as you've just pointed out, between frames there's 18 centimetres in one direction and 18 centimetres in another, and then the ball's travelling at 100 kilometres an hour, and then foots are there are so many variables that they are ignoring their variable element within it, that my frustration is they just don't have the technology to call these marginal ones where the lines are virtually overlapping. That, as you've just identified, easily without the extremes of somebody's hit the ball as hard as they can, somebody's racing as fast as they can out of defence, somebody's running as fast as they can, and without sticking all of those variables in, you still have a reasonable variable of 15 centimetres.
Yeah. And this is the main argument from VAR in Norway has been that they have insisted that they will need some time to make this work properly. It started with 10 rounds. Then it was 1 season, and after 2 seasons, they said, well, we still need time to get better. So they're just pushing the line ahead of them, and it's mostly about time. So they're trying to make it look like that time is everything. Like, our biggest problem is that it takes some time to wait for an offside to be called. It goes much, much deeper than this. From the idea of the whole game, it's supposed to be good luck, bad luck, and decisions that works or don't work, and
the joy of the moment.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole thing about being a football supporter is the joy of that moment.
Yeah, because it's going to make up for everything, and any bad week or trouble at work is going to go away. But if you know that someone is looking into you, and you have just filed an application for a goal, and now someone is going to sit in a computer room and try and take it away from you for some marginal, some stupid margin that it doesn't even, it's not even founded in technology. And their arguments are usually like short and sweet. They will just say this is accurate. I mean, it's going to cost me 1 calorie to say it's accurate. It's going to cost me a lot more to write all of this in the article, and it's going to cost me a lot more to explain it to people who want to listen. So I don't expect everyone to understand everything, but I wish that the people who make decisions, being club leaders who vote to keep this or to scrap this, and especially the people who are operating it, they should know about all of this. So, like you, I love technology. I have plenty of technology, and I work in television. I don't have a problem with technology, but it's not always like that technology is the answer. And in those other sports that you mentioned, it's more starting and stopping. Football is continuous movement. So if there is if something's going on in one part of the field, then you may have an advantage if you can quickly put the ball into play and pass it on. But if you start and stop more than you need to, you're going to break the game up into pieces and people are losing track. And the referees have often said that they are the last one to know if they make a bad decision, which is true. Up until VAR came, our head of refereeing, Terje Hauge, he was, we had a cup semi-final in 2007, and one of the Lillestrøm players, he made a ridiculously obvious handball, but it was not called off, and he scored, and they went to the cup final. And he said that this has haunted me for years. People were standing and watching the situation on the terrace, but no one did. We didn't have 3G until 2009, and first streaming of football games came the year after. So it's a selective memory. I mean, they have all kinds of reasons for why they want and need VAR. I understand that they want to make the right call. It's completely understandable. But there's a paradox here as well, because we suggested that we take these about £2 million or something, we scrap VAR and we put this into other projects that will help professionalize the referees to give you other tools. And I mean, I understand it's difficult for a linesman to call an offside when half the pitches are artificial turf and there are no lines in the grass. I mean, they have very little to kind of use as a reference. So I understand that it's hard, and the play is moving faster and faster as well. But they don't want to work full time refereeing. They want to have this as a side income in weekends and have their day job during the week. But they still want the best tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't want to work as a carpenter full time, but boy, do I want them power tools. And I have many good reasons to buy all of them, but I'm paying with my own money.
Yeah.
And that's my decision. It doesn't affect anyone else. So when the refs are saying, we don't want to work full-time, but we want full-time tools because we want to be able to do refereeing in Europe. Mm-hmm. I would think the first step for that to happen is to actually work with refereeing on full-time. Even if it's refereeing in lower leagues, I mean, they have said that VAR makes it easier to recruit new referees. And if you go back in the numbers and check, you're going to see those numbers are very stationary. There's no indication that VAR will attract more people to do refereeing. They have said it's less harassment towards the referees now with VAR than it was before. It's probably because a lot of the anger is directed to VAR as a system. Colina, the famous Italian referee, he was out just days after we had made this final decision to not scrap VAR, and he said harassment towards referees has never been worse. So it's alternating arguments. It's a very difficult discussion to win. They have always claimed to have the technical or the what would you call it? We as in the no group are controlled by emotions, and they are controlled, well, rationally. I mean, they have reason. So, but when we meet them with reason, like this, like with math, with images that illustrate very clear points that's flaws in their technology, we meet only silence. So they always wanted VAR. They will fight to keep VAR for as long as they can. They will go down with the ship together in the lookout post at the top of the mast. I mean, they will die on this hill for VAR, I'm sure.
One of the things that frustrates me about it, I think they can have the technology. If the purpose of the technology, which is one of the things they say in Scotland, is the reason we've got the technology, is to overturn those glaringly, obviously wrong decisions. The one that you mentioned about the referee, who everybody watching, you know, I think just before we came on, I spoke about a referee I knew or I'd met who'd made a bad call in a Rangers Dundee United game. And he commented to me before the game had restarted, half the people on the ground knew by text message that he'd made a wrong call. Well, for me, a glaringly obvious error you would spot within 30 seconds, 60 seconds of getting the replay. So one of the simple things that I've always thought is, if you cannot identify the foul that you're trying to spot or the issue you're trying to overturn inside 60 seconds, it is not a glaringly obvious error.
Yeah,
therefore, move on.
And also, it's about the intention of the rule. Like with the offside rule, the intention is that the attacker is not going to lurk around the box and just have a long pass and score easily. That was the intention. So when Denmark gets called off in, was it in the World Cup, I think, against Germany, it was a toe or something, didn't have anything to say. He wasn't in front. I mean, he didn't come one-on-one with the keeper. And Denmark's goal was disallowed. And then Germany comes up, shoots the ball into the hand of a Danish defender, and it's a penalty for Germany. To me, it has nothing to do with fair play or getting it right. We saw it also with Belgium's disallowed goal. Don't remember who they played. There was handball, but it was the tip of his fingers barely touching the ball. But since they had this sensor in the ball, they could tell by looking at graphs that the ball did indeed touch his fingertips. That was midfield. And then he kept running and he hit it into the box, and Belgium scored, and it was disallowed, which is disturbing for me as a football fan, because I genuinely feel that is not the right decision. That is not a fair decision. They did not have that much advantage. And what if he was pushed in the back? What if that was the reason he fell forward and touched the ball, right? So there is a sequence of actions, and VAR is going to intervene in some of them, but not all. So if you have a throw-in that's completely wrong, but it ends up in a goal, VAR will not do anything about it. And they have rewritten the hands rule so many times, no one is keeping track. We had another Bodø/Glimt match, I think it was the opening round. An attacker, he gets the ball into his hand. He's falling on his back or something. His hand is stretched both arms out, or at least one arm out. And the ball goes into his hand and to a teammate who scores. And the goal stands because accidental handball is allowed if you don't score yourself. But in the next round, we had accidental handballs midfield, and it was immediately called for handball. So it's getting harder and harder to understand, and rules, I feel, are being rewritten to accommodate VAR instead of serving the game. The point of the rules is to have a fluent game and allow the referee to be as invisible as possible. I mean, he should not be the center of attention. And I believe our FAA has said something like that. It's not the point to make the referees the center of attention. When this season started, they are producing their own TV show called Dommer Focus, Focus on the Referee, which kind of illustrates that I think at least some of these referees really want and like attention. But they are not the main competitors. I mean, we need them. We want them to have tools. I banter a lot when I'm at games. I don't send text messages after the game. I mean, that's those kind of things we need to work on. This is kind of a sidetrack, but so many times we read in the news that someone is getting threats or harassment, like a player who missed a penalty or referees. A number of occasions where referees have claimed to have received something, someone said something to them. They don't want to say what it is. We rarely get a chance to see the message. And in those few cases where we get to see the message, it's from some Chinese or Turkish guy who lost money because he missed a penalty or something. It's completely outside of our control. So, and this brings me to believe that it's useful for the referees to have a bad guy in the shadows that's easy to point to. And it's impossible for us to identify and deal with. So a useful enemy, so to speak. So in that way, they can create a problem. Like we are being harassed. We can't do our job properly. So we need this tool. And it's no real way to defend ourselves against that. I mean, I don't want people to send threats to referees, but in most cases, it's some gambler or it's some struggling individual who can't really bring you any harm. So I feel that our discussion in Norway, it has just divided people into being against or being pro VAR, and the moderate voices in the middle hasn't really had the chance to say anything, and that's where we are right now.
So my perception of whenever VAR is challenged is your point that the people then say, we're just in the first season. We're getting to grips with the technology. And then in the second season, it's, well, we're getting to grips with the technology and we're developing the technology and the technology is getting better. So then one of the things they do is they point to the technology that's used in Champions League level football and at the English Premiership and say, look, the issue we've got is we just can't afford that level of technology. So we're doing well with what we are. So there's two elements to that. One is, well, that's fine. So acknowledge the limits of your technology and stop trying to pretend that you can have 100% accuracy on the decision-making. Acknowledge that there is a margin of error. I mean, I just don't see what's weak or wrong about, again, the offside that brought us together, where the lines are sandwiched and the players are virtually in line. I don't see what's wrong with saying, and if they still want to review it, insufficient information on field decision stands, and just making that call quickly. Getting back to my point, I would have either 30 or 60 seconds maximum for any VAR decision. Anything that extends above that, it's not a clear and obvious issue. because the technology is not giving you it, move along. Then the final question is, on that principle, as the guy who studied the technology more than me, is the level of technology that they've got at Champions League level, World Cup level, English Premiership level, is that as accurate as they are claiming it to be? The decision-making's quicker. I mean, I had a friend who was down at the Man City game the weekend there, and he was saying that they had decisions which in Scotland would have taken 2 minutes that they took 15, 20 seconds over because they've got the AI technology that they keep talking about. And then we see images in World Cup games or Champions League games where it's a CGI image. It's not the still picture that we have. And I sometimes wonder, are you conning me with that by making it seem, by using CGI images, are you making me think, well, look at that. It must be some sort of super duper technology that's producing that image. Therefore, it must be correct to a millimeter.
I told this group that I don't bet myself, but I would bet most of my money that the next match-fixing scandal is going to be heavily involved in VAR. When you see these 3D images, I know they are for illustrative purposes, but it's just as easy to make a player offside or onside with those pictures than it is to create the right image. So, and very often you don't see the passing of the ball in the same frame. So I really understand that if you're already not fully convinced by the system, I would also be skeptical to a shiny 3D animation. What we see here is that they have been taking some, well, they have been apologizing for spending time, but they have never admitted any weakness to the system itself. They know that we started with 5 cameras, now we have 6, up to 13. They know we have this amount of cameras, but they say we use the same system as they do in UEFA. This is no Temu version of VAR. But that's just the software. If they don't know how to interpret the video that comes on top, then you're back to square one. So if they, like with this 35 centimeters of offside that I sent them, the day after the game, he was on the telly claiming it was 35 centimeters offside. It's not even marginal. I understand that this upsets people, but the most important thing is to get it right. So sort of like an upwards and downwards talk to me. And a month after that, he admitted that they put the lines wrong and it was 5 centimeters offside. So he did admit they placed the lines wrong. But if he had admitted that the system has a flaw, or the system cannot handle situations in between this and this many centimeters, people would lose complete faith in the system. So they are kind of bound to just stick with the story and claim it to be a very good, very accurate system and to cover all the mistakes that they can.
So what we've covered here, because one bring this to an end, is we've covered that players move between frames. You could easily have, in an extreme, possibly even up to a meter, as close as a meter.
Yeah,
of error, or is that just a bit too much? Is it around sort of 30 centimeters?
In a very wide shot, maybe. I mean, a lot of situations it's going to be less, but as you saw in one of the videos here, there's a free kick and the ball moves more than 2 meters between two frames. And that's about, I don't know, somewhere above 100 kilometers an hour. And with players on the far end of the field, and players closest to you, it can be perceived differently, because if you pan with the player in motion,
mm-hmm.
this player is going to be
static in the picture.
The proportions are going to look more right, mm-hmm. But the player is running in the opposite direction of the way the direction the camera is panning, is going to be exaggerated even more. So you have to kind of look at every situation to see what's happening before and after the frame that we're looking for. Is and this then, guy heading this way or that way? You know, and that needs to be in the back of your mind.
And then the other issue that you've identified is the difficulty of putting, when they draw the lines down, the difficulty of accurately getting the correct depth on a 2D surface that's on a screen.
Yeah, and that must be guesswork, because there is no real other way to do it with the amount of cameras that we have. And I saw this other game that was I think it was Crystal Palace versus Leicester. I had it in the article. And the PGO, or what do they call it? The referees in the Premier League. They have a Twitter account, and they released some images, and they had a vertical line on the defender, but not on the attacker. And the attacker is leaning forward, he's running. So when you pull this out into some 3D space, you draw the lines, and then you kind of estimate the height of the head of the attacker, he's clearly offside. So if this can happen in the Premier League, of course it can happen anywhere. We played Austria in Nations League, and it was 1-1. And Haaland got a ball and he scored, and it was called for offside by the linesman. But then VAR overturned it because they forgot to put the vertical lines on Haaland's foot while he was running back. So he looked less offside than he was. So now he's exactly on the line the way it looks. And it was overturned, and Norway won 2-1, which is great for us. But if it had been the other way, I think people would be pretty steaming, because it was a Danish team. So we can all have our theories that we are kind of helping our brother people a little bit. So that's the stuff in Eurovision, you know, you always vote for your neighbours.
UK always gets no points because everybody hates us.
It's not a black and white tool. It's careful assessment of images and what happens before and after. And you need to know your margin of error. And if you then decide to intervene, you should be really, really sure that you're doing the right thing. Like I said, we had 18 overturned goals in 2024. Four of them was a margin of 5 to 4 centimeters, which means they could have been a goal. They could not. It could have been disallowed, but it was overturned. And that's it's more than 20% of every goal VAR intervened in. More than 20% of that could be wrong. So the fact that this doesn't bother them, seemingly, it leads me to believe that there's just one answer to VAR in the FA, and that's yes. When we had this big vote, there is no one at all in the FA, in the board, in the local parts, the local institutions of the FA in Norway. Our head coach for the national team, he's against VAR, and he's basically told to not talk about it. So it's the only place in the country where everybody says yes to VAR. And that tells me that people are not doing their own thinking or are not allowed to do their own thinking or speaking about it.
Yeah, so my perception, you touched on this earlier, about so that referees can get to referee games on the continent. So my perception is UEFA have decided this is happening. I always feel that the people who run UEFA are not, have never been in their life an everyday football fan who goes every, because they just don't understand. As I got back to, it's the joy of the moment. I don't mind a glaringly obvious error being overturned and using technology for that. But, and people, some, if you're in favour of VAR and you're listening to this, you might turn around and say, well, so VAR gets some wrong. Well, the guy, the linesman gets some wrong too. So it's just, we're swapping out.
Yeah.
I suppose our point would be, yes, but if the linesman gets it wrong, he gets it wrong in the moment. As a fan, the decision's there. I'm not having to wait 2 minutes to decide and then still find out that it's not 100% accurate. That you can get to either enjoy the fact that the goal was chopped off, be disappointed that the goal was chopped off, or celebrate the goal happening in the moment. You're having to wait on this VAR, who's being portrayed as this godlike figure who's never wrong and is 100% accurate, when what I'd seen, and then the more detailed data you've got, is up to 30 centimetres. Anything, any offside decision within 30 centimetres, they shouldn't be spending any time over it because they can't determine it.
Yeah.
But UEFA has decided they want it. So...
But they also...
If the individual FAs want their match officials to participate in UEFA competitions, they're going to have VAR in the domestic competition. So that's what's happened. So do you want to then talk through what has happened in Norway around VAR? Because we're, I think many people listening to this will be aware that there was a vote in Norway initially to get rid of it. But that's not, so do you want to briefly touch on the where we are now with VAR in Norway and what's happened and what's about to happen?
Yeah, VAR was mentioned in 2020 as a part of a strategic plan. The sentence was something like, consider to introduce VAR in Norway. And this was quickly adopted as it has been decided. It was involved in the documents that went out to broadcasters who applied to broadcast the games. And they also decided that they will, of course, have something to do with organizing the whole VAR room and the whole process. 16 of the clubs in the Eliteserien voted if they wanted VAR or not. One of them said no. They were not presented with any kind of documentation as apart from a sales pitch on 4 pages. That's why I'm telling them, I had to tell them this. I had to teach them this because they didn't bother doing an investigation beforehand. They just said, this is coming anyway. Do any one of you want to argue about it? And then one club says no. Last autumn, the second tier was also included in the vote. So of 32 clubs, 19 of them voted to scrap VAR. And it was an even, yeah, it was even bigger numbers when you range the clubs. The clubs that have played with VAR were in great numbers. So everybody who wants VAR, almost all of them have never used it. So either they know something that we don't, or they are being told this is what's right for football. The supporters are upset, but they will rage a bit, and then we're just going to sit quiet in a boat and let the storm pass. But this continues to interfere with us. And when these 19 versus 13 clubs voted that it was scrap VAR, then the board of the FA had to go against those numbers. So they said, we are the whole board agrees we're keeping VAR, and then they started the work going out to the grassroots clubs that will come to the general annual meeting and make sure that they had a sufficient amount of clubs there who would vote their way. And this is very similar to a few years back when we discussed if we were going to participate in the World Cup in Qatar. The FA threatened with grave economical consequences. They have all kinds of ways to pressure small clubs because they are basically, they're sitting on all the money and they are not making this money. Most of the money in Norwegian football comes from the top club or the elite serien. It's the very most of it. The FA, they own the tournament, but it's not like, it's not their good craftsmanship that brings all this income, you know?
Same in Scotland, yeah.
Yeah. So to overturn those big clubs, that was very unpopular, and most of the clubs have on the Notovar side has, are the clubs with the greatest attendances. So almost all the organized supporter clubs, if not all, are against it. Most of the club were against it, but we got overruled. And that's democracy for you. It's democracy, but as we see what's going on in the States, that's democracy too. It's about how you use it. I mean, if you can do gerrymandering and you can have all sorts of mechanisms that will make the outcome suit you. I mean, they are on top of this pyramid. They are the board. They have a lot of formal power, and they have the informal power where they just walk around and talk to people. And we knew when they said we're gonna bring it to the general annual meeting, we knew that vote was gonna be lost. So right now, I don't see how we can win a vote like that, because they have too many loyal small clubs that will just log onto Teams for 2 hours, cast their vote, and leave. But the top clubs, they can do even more, I think, because we are the ones that have to deal with this, and we need them to do some work in the back office, because we can show banners, we can intervene in games, but we had protests and banners and boycotts for 1.5 season without anything happening. It was when the fish cakes hit the grass, that's when something happened. So that's what they taught us. They don't listen until they absolutely have to, unfortunately, because that makes us look like bullies to the uninformed. We don't want the games to stop, but we don't want the sport to die in a network of technology and rewritten rules and micromanagement.
So that's where we are with VR. We've got issues here. Do you want to remind our listeners what your club is?
My club is Stabæk. That's where I grew up. I was a shit player for 7 years. I scored 2 goals. And one of them was in practice. And so I tried to pay back. I went to my first game in 95. And we have been in the top two tiers for, that's 30 years. Right. We're in the second level now, but I'm hoping we can come back. And I mean, clubs like Bodø/Glimt, they have showed that you can come from nowhere to anywhere with very little. They were in the second level in 2016, 2017, and they played Rome just a few years after and won 6-0 or something. So we need to keep that dream alive, that it's your local club matters. Don't watch football just from your telly. You need to go to the stadium, and you need to go there with your friends or find your friends there. Join us on a bus to go across country, have a few beers, and watch the game. So my gut reaction when someone is trying to interfere with that for micromanagement purposes, it upsets me. That's why I spend all my free time, just free time. I mean, we are the ones who are never making money. We are just paying. I mean, we are paying for the season tickets. We're paying for the broadcast. We're paying for the trips. We're paying for shirts and merch and all that. We are the payers, and they would be absolutely nothing without us. Mm-hmm. So they need to listen to us.
Okay, brilliant. Well, with that, I will say, Bjorna, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.